And welcome back to another edition of The Center Ring, also known as TCR, if you want to be cool and hip. I am Tim. The gentleman who joins me, as always, is named Brandon. Hello. How's it going?
You caught me off guard with that hello. Usually there's a little more production behind that.
This is pre-recorded shows, brah. You gotta stay on your toes. Episode 11 here of The Center Ring. We are one episode into the double digits. Things are getting real. People are starting to notice us at this point, I'd say. We have a pretty good show for you today, I must say. We have, as always, the micro. We have DreamHack CSGO, DreamHack Smash, DreamHack Winter. Everything there. It seems like there is a DreamHack every week now. You need to start pumping the brakes on those.
What, DreamHacks?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's one every week.
Yeah, well, got to make that money, I guess.
I suppose.
There's too many tournaments in general, but...
Yes, but you know, what happens when you have so many DreamHacks is you start being around the same people over and over, and that can only cause tension that eventually will build up and maybe make you a little tired. And as always, where follows esports, there is drama. And that is what I want to make our first topic today. Is drama in esports yet again? So if you haven't heard, I don't know where have you been, because it's been all over the esports interwebs, just everywhere. But at DreamHack Winter, there was an issue that brought up between Loda of the Dota 2 community and Richard Lewis of the CSGO community. But basically what started this was Richard Lewis tweeted out a picture of a written sign, because, you know, everybody and their mother has one at these events that has some stupid thing on there.
Hey,
that,
and pro tip, DreamHack, put a camera up higher if you're going to give people signs. It's not cool when they, like, cover up the entire stage. Anyway.
Let's play it cool on the signs. Not everybody needs a sign. But so he found a sign apparently that said, you know, proud mom, Hiko. So he tweeted a picture out saying, can someone please tell the groupie to come get her sign or something. Something along those lines. Basically inferring that he had a groupie stay the night and that was it.
Groupie may or may not have been Hiko's mother.
I think that's what he was trying to say. So... fast forward to, like, the next morning, I guess. The sign actually belonged to Loda from the Dota 2 community. It was actually his girlfriend's sign, Kelly Milkey's, and she took offense reading it as he was directing it to her being the groupie. Fast forward a little more, Loda gets involved, tells Richard Lewis, hey, why don't we talk about this? Richard Lewis is like, you know where I'm at. And so he went behind stage where Richard Lewis was at, which Richard Lewis got really upset about, even though he said, come find me. And then one thing led to another. Supposedly, Loda put his forehead on Richard Lewis. Some reports are that it was a full-on headbutt. I don't think it was a full-on headbutt.
I think he got really close.
And, you know, maybe foreheads touched, but I don't think it was a headbutt. And then Richard Lewis put him in a chokehold, and, I mean, there's the story, right?
That's it.
I mean, that's really in a nutshell. Obviously, we can go into detail where...
Well, police were called.
Yes, police were called. You know, things were broken up. And at the end of the day, all they basically had to do was shake hands and say, I'm sorry. Like two children on the playground.
And I think I saw Richard Lewis tweet at some point that they did. They did talk. And I assume they had to talk it out because DreamHack released a statement that was supposed to be representative of DreamHack, Richard Lewis, and Loda.
Yeah, and I read that, and they said that they apologized, and we're just going to move on from this. And I think DreamHack expected that to be the nail in the coffin. Let's put this one to bed, boys. You know, we still have a long day ahead of us, because that was during, I think that was on Saturday, which was the last day of the event, since it was a rare Saturday final.
It was about halfway through the last day.
So I'm sure DreamHack was like, let's put this thing out there, say we're done, we're over, everyone's happy, and we'll move on. But that was not the case, considering it is still being talked about today. And so days later,
you and I both notice this on the cast, the DreamHack stream, the complete like 180 on the desk, like after the incident happened. And thankfully, or like thanks to Twitter, everybody knew about it. The desk was just even keel. No more jokes, no more laughing, just dead stares and analysis. That was about it.
Yeah, they definitely tightened up after that, especially Richard Lewis and Thorne. And Thorne got involved on this because him and Richard Lewis are buddies. So he came to the rescue on Twitter and basically was calling out Loda and Kelly and everybody else who was arguing with him, saying, no, this happened, no, that happened. And everybody was saying everything happened. So the police finally got involved. They took people's questions. And I still guess, even after taking everybody's point of view, still really either A, couldn't decide who started it, or B, really didn't give a rip. And I'm going to assume it's the latter.
Yeah, I guess after it was all said and done, they were like, it is what it is. Yeah, nobody's hurt.
Are you hurt? No.
And there was a picture of like Loda's neck that looked like it had a red mark on it. But it was like you could have got that from a rug burn off your collar of your shirt. It was pretty lame.
Right. And I mean, we've talked about this before. It's just being an adult, right? It's being a professional. We've talked about it with Alchemist last episode about, I asked the question of, as a producer, where do you sit on, you know, the swearing in broadcasting? And he said he has no issue with it, really, as long as it stays away from the no-nos, like being racist and such. To where, yeah, well, he said, talking smack is part of the game. This is kind of the fun part about it and everything there. Which I agree with, yes, talking smack is part of the game. I don't think, though, broadcasters should be doing it to the extent that Richard Lewis and Thorne and some others take it to.
So yeah, we just briefly talked about this before the show, and I'm 100% with you. The issue is not the trash talk. It's the way they react to people who are reacting to them. That's kind of hard to follow, but like, for instance, he makes a joke on Twitter about Hiko's mother.
Innocent joke. And honestly, when I first read the sign, that is an innocent joke. It is funny.
It's funny, and Hiko totally gets it. Whenever, like, before the stuff hit the fan, Hiko told Kelly and Richard Lewis on Twitter to take it to a DM and figure it out. Like, he tweeted at both of them and was like, hey, you guys, DM. Because he knew... I feel like he might know Richard Lewis.
Right.
Knew it was like, going
to
blow up.
Let's do this behind closed doors. Let's not bring this to the public, because once the public grabs a hold of it, it's never going to be let go.
So after this comes out and the joke's there, Kelly Milkies is obviously like taking it the wrong way, is pissed off about it, tells Loda to, I guess, do something about it. I don't know. He's white knighting for sure.
Definitely is getting some.
Loda says, let's meet up and talk about it. And then this is where it goes downhill. Richard Lewis doesn't say like, okay, yeah, let's meet up and we can talk about it. Richard Lewis says, I'm on the main stage. You know where to find me. Then later tweets out again, says, don't you hate it when somebody says they're going to come talk to you and never show up? He is now like trying to push this guy.
I think at that point, if Richard Lewis would have just said, or even not even on Twitter, but even when he did meet him in person, saying, hey, man, look, I had no idea that was your girlfriend's sign. It was honestly all in jest. It was about Hiko's mom. It wasn't even about your girlfriend. I found the sign on the floor. There's ways to word you're sorry without really admitting fault. You can say, hey, I'm sorry that you got offended. And that's not really saying you're sorry. Or you can say, you know, I'm sorry it came across that way, which is a much more politically correct way of saying, I'm sorry you didn't get the joke. Like, if he would have said that, I felt like everything would have been, hey, we're cool. Like, totally get it, whatever. But for whatever reason, man, these guys always have to, like, puff their chests up and just take it to a whole new level, to the point where Richard Lewis is seriously almost responding to, like, everybody who tweets at him. Even, like
the 12 and 11-year-olds that are tweeting at him, trying to make fun of him, he's retweeting their stuff to try and, I don't know if it's to shame them or to make the people that support him, that follow him, to respond to them. But his Twitter over the last 2 days has been nothing but either people making satirical jokes about Richard Lewis choking them out with funny pictures, like of Richard actually kind of being a nice guy, which I have no doubt in my mind that there are people that he is like a complete gentleman to. Like, they just laugh, have fun, whatever, joke around, make fun of each other's mothers, whatever. And then the other half of the people on his Twitter are people that are basically telling him that he needs to go die.
which is just another set of the extreme. I'm not saying Richard Lewis is all 100% at fault on this, because those people are just as ridiculous. Why he even wastes his time responding to people like that, or carry on a 3-day argument over public Twitter with Eternal Envy of Team Secret of Dota 2, why he keeps responding to them, I will never know.
And
eventually, you just have to block people and move on in life and take the higher road.
That's my whole problem with this situation.
Which nobody really is doing right now.
No, I mean, this is like systemic from Richard Lewis and Thorin specifically. And it's a reason why, like, the League of Legends community, especially Richard Lewis, they've basically said, we don't want any more of it, and have banned him from everything. And a lot of people will argue that it's censorship and he's a content ban and it's wrong. When he brings this kind of, like, he perpetuates all of that, like, that what everyone calls toxic community.
If I'm having a party and I don't like you, not inviting you to the party is not censorship.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the way I see it. It was when, like, eventually, I think Richard Lewis, Thorin, or really any writer out there who finds himself in an argumental situation every time needs to eventually look themselves in the mirror and be like, is it me? Is it me?
There were a lot of people tweeting that exact sentiment out to him, and it's totally true. I mean, this goes back to when he first started getting into the Counter-Strike scene, he was doing this to people. There was an incident at a tournament that he was casting with Henry G and James, I can never pronounce his last name. He always casts with DDK on Face It, James Bardolph.
Something like Bardolph.
Anyway, he's doing this event with him, and apparently there's like this disagreement between the casters and how it's going. And then instead of it just ending, you know, with what happened on camera, like Richard and Thorin go and make a by the numbers video and spend like 25 minutes just tearing this guy apart on their podcast. It got to a point on the podcast where Raheem actually had to go and do like an Ask Me Anything on the Global Offensive subreddit and basically spilled it all out on there. Like, these are the things Richard Lewis said. These were the lies that Richard Lewis said, and this is what actually happened. And like, that's the stuff that kind of bothers me. Is like, you could have just left it alone and everybody still thought you were hilarious. Like, in this whole situation, you tweet out that Hiko's mom thing, and if you would have stopped there, people would have been like, why? Would have been looking at Loda like, why are you mad?
Right. It was a simple joke.
It was a little joke. Why are you mad?
And now Loda has really kept quiet since the incident. I think since DreamHack talked to him, for the most part, Loda has been quiet on the situation. No one on the scene. It's really what it happened was, and I hate that it happened like this, but it turned into a Dota 2 versus CSGO community. And I can tell you that's the way it worked, because today in Unfiltered, Richard Lewis talked about saying how toxic the Dota 2 community is. I don't disagree with him in the sense of the community can be toxic. What gaming community can't? Because I can point out a lot of parts of CSGO where it's just as bad.
Yeah, that's every single game has that. The thing that bothers me, like we talked about with CSGO, is that you've got these two casters that are arguably the most popular analysts, and they're good. Richard Lewis is a very good host. He does it well. Thorin knows a ton about Counter-Strike. All the way from 1.3 on, knows a ton of information.
They just have the tolerance of a 16-year-old when it comes to criticism.
Yeah, it's like they never got past that whole like 13-year-old I'm a bigger man than you, like, just immaturity. Like, they've never gotten past that part.
Not every tweet, not every critique is supposed to be trying to pick a fight with you. And at some point, I think esports needs to mature and grow up as a community as a whole. Yes, you'll always have those people online and stuff. That's just part of, you know, life being on the internet. But eventually, casters and everything are going to have to grow up and realize that maybe, yes, Richard Lewis's tweet was innocent, but maybe not make a your mom joke like this next time. Maybe just keep it about the game. Not saying we can't have fun. There are plenty. I mean, look at TNT's basketball pre and post game show with Charles Barkley and Shaq and all them. They all make fun of each other and take pop shots at each other and still have fun. but they all keep it very kind of PG appropriate fun. They don't call people retarded. They don't, you know, make fun of nationalities. They don't try to be so combative about every little thing that comes their way. And I think it's just part of growing up and being professional. Like, eventually esports will be on TV. Eventually we'll catch enough attention to where bigger companies are going to want to get involved. And sorry, but the bigger companies are less tolerant.
Yeah, they're not going to let you. They're not going to let you make, you know, gay jokes on the desk, call people apes, or yeah, fight backstage. I mean, that's not going to happen.
And you know what? People can be like, yeah, well, this is on Twitch and you can do that. That's great. I'm telling you, eventually bigger companies with money will come in. And they might like the streaming aspect. They might not want to put this on ESPN as a regular basis and start using streaming more as like their outlet for esports, because they realize that's where the public is at with esports. But their rules are still going to apply.
And that's, in my opinion, the biggest thing about all of this is that it just shows how polarizing, or like how much of a transition the community is in right now. Because you've got, on one hand, you've got people that are, you know, supporting Richard Lewis and everything he does, him and Thor, and everything they do on streams, as like, this is esports. If you don't like it, you can leave. This is what we do. And then you've got everybody else that looks at it kind of like you and I do and realizes, like, yes, it's funny sometimes. They do know what they're doing, but you just can't be a big industry and do that. You just can't have that type of discussion and banter that they always call it, you know, fun banter or whatever. You can't have that when you're trying to appeal to a wide national audience.
Right. How are you going to mock the Dota 2 community for being, you know, quote unquote dumbasses like Richard Lewis called them and saying, you know, they're kids, they're children, while you're making that statement? Like, as those words are coming out of his mouth, I can't even wrap my brain around how hypocritical it all is where it's just like, do you not realize what you and half of what Thorin talk about are immature things that kids are laughing at? Again, I have nothing wrong with it necessarily. I think, you know, I don't want it to sound like, which I know it does, but I don't want it to seem like I'm ganging up on Richard Lewis and Thorin. I think Loda should probably have just have taken the joke and, you know, tell Yoko Ono to chill out. Because that's, you know, I think that's what that approach was, is when she was like, hey, I don't like that, go tell him. But at the same time, I think people have gotten fired for less. And even the fact that DreamHack, because it later came out, didn't you say DreamHack? You told me DreamHack was wanting them gone.
He tweeted out and said, and this is a direct quote from Richard, which this was another screw up on his part, in my opinion, basically telling everybody everything that was going on. I understand that's part of his deal. Like, that's Richard Lewis's brand, is putting everything out there, and that's him or whatever. But he tweeted out and he said, and I should thank Faceit staff for fighting for me and stopping DreamHack from pulling me from the broadcast. That, even if
you can't, even if you call out people like that.
Even if you could go back and tell DreamHack I'm sorry, you calling out DreamHack now forces them to never put you on another broadcast.
Well, and he even tweeted out saying, I don't know if I'm going to work with DreamHack again after the way they handle this.
And that's a total offensive move from him, of like, I'm going to say I quit before DreamHack says they banned me or whatever.
And why though? Because, oh, I got my pride hurt. They didn't take my back on this.
And well, that's all it is he's trying to seem like he's the victim almost in that situation,
but
between
no
him
one,
and DreamHack?
No one is the victim in this situation when it's both of their fault. Both of them are the victim.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about just specifically, like, if he says, I may not work another DreamHack, as opposed to DreamHack saying, you're never going to work another event, it's not Richard Lewis getting banned from DreamHack. It's Richard Lewis quitting DreamHack. It's more, it's like you said, it's more about the pride thing.
Yeah, it's the, you're not going to fire me, I quit bit.
Yeah.
Which we all know what that translates to. So now you have Thorin, who can't do ESL, and then you have Richard Lewis, who is supposedly not doing any more DreamHack.
Which, I mean, and now that DreamHack was purchased by ESL, I'm not sure he would have done any more anyway, because I guess, like, he doesn't do ESL because Thorin can't? Which, Thorin can't do ESL because he went too far with a joke and ticked off an entire country? Like, again, eventually they're going to run out of jobs.
Again, people have gotten fired and fined by their employers for less. So eventually you have to start looking at all of this and be like, if I keep getting fired or if I keep getting yelled at by all these communities, it's not them not being able to take the joke. It's you maybe delivering the joke or just realizing that it's time to grow up. And I mean, and this is, like you said, this is Richard Lewis, where he is a very, you know, important figure in esports. A lot of people look up to him within esports and outside of esports. I mean, he is what esports journalism is. He breaks a lot of stories and a lot of people talk to him. At the same time, a lot of people don't talk to him because of that.
Yeah, there was, I hate that he, and I've said this to you, I hate that he's like the only option for a lot of the stories that get broken. And I'm sure because he's been around for so long and he does have a good track record with, like, when he breaks a story, he doesn't reveal sources. He keeps the people that need to be protected protected.
And they typically come out to be true.
Yeah, I really wish people would, especially the pros, would talk to other people. And that's not to say that I wish Richard Lewis would be out of work. I just wish that that it would give everybody else, all the other aspiring esports journalists and the esports community, would show them that you don't have to act like Richard Lewis acts and still be effective at working in esports.
Yeah, there's a plenty of journalism who've gotten where they are now by just being nice and
good journalists.
Right, being professional. So I guess to wrap up all of this drama that happened, that really, I mean, just the fact that we spent the first 30 minutes of our show today talking about it, I think shows that it really shadowed what was actually a really good event for Counter-Strike and many other games. That my final take on this is, if this ever gets to Richard Lewis's ears, it's not that I hate him. It's not that I think he's bad. I think he's really good at what he does. I just wish, as a top figurehead of esports, he would lead the way of being professional and just taking the high road and not acting like a child 98% of the time when it comes to it.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
But enough about that, because like I said, I really don't think it's going to change, considering it's been going on for the last 3 days where he's still
tweeting people and cut your losses, man. Just call it a day. You're not doing any favors for yourself by keeping it up.
At this point, even people who are on his side, even if Loda did get close to you, I mean, at this point,
Loda's now 90% out of the picture, because now it's about Richard Lewis being an ass, not Loda, you know, physically. But who knows? You know, him and Thorne will probably find a job somewhere else.
Yep. There's plenty out there. So looking at then, just moving on from that, looking at DreamHack Winter CSGO, we had awesome matchups. There were 8 teams. Like always, let's start from worst to first, shall we? So you started out in group play. You had 2 groups, Group A, Group B. Group A included Team Solo Mid, Virtus Pro, Team Liquid, and Legacy Esports, which is from the Oceanic qualifier, so that would be from Australia. Group B, which actually turned out to be a very stacked group. Fnatic, Luminosity, Ninjas in Pajamas, and Team Envious. Going through, Legacy Esports actually got last place. Team Envious actually followed right after them. Envious actually had a pretty weak tournament, actually not winning a single match. They didn't even make it out of groups, which
Envious didn't.
Yeah, Envious did not. Ninjas in Pajamas did not make it out of groups, which who knows what they're doing. I feel like NIP is just in cruise control until the end of the year.
NIP is in cruise control, but they also got eliminated by the Cinderella story of the tournament.
Right. And that's what a point I was going to make here is, because to be fair, Envious, anybody in Group B did not see Luminosity being the threat that they were.
Because Luminosity was the second of 2 teams, not European teams, to get 16-0'd in groups in the first game.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of looking at, I mean, let's do this then. Let's scrap worst to first. We're going to call an audible here. I want to focus on Luminosity right now. So Luminosity came into this. They just did a roster change where they added Taco and Fair.
No. FNX.
FNX.
Close.
Excuse me. I knew it started with an F. Taco, FNX. They added them.
2 days before the tournament.
Two days. They added two new players. I even stated this last episode where I was surprised that they would have done that because Luminosity was on the upswing. I mean, they weren't struggling. I don't know why.
I mentioned it on the last episode. Like, when you looked at the team, Steel and Bolts, who they replaced, were consistently the bottom of the team, and they looked kind of like dead weight. But in my opinion, when you looked at it and compared them to the available Brazilian players out there, there wasn't a whole lot of upgrade. Apparently, I was wrong. They said they changed the players because their play style got stagnant, and they were losing games the same way, so they needed to shake up something.
Now, I can only imagine what was going through their heads then, because when their first match of the tournament was against Fnatic, and then they got 16-0, they didn't even take a round. I'm sure Fallen, everybody on that team was probably like,
I went back and looked at that game, and it was on Dust 2. If you look at the rest of Luminosity's matches, Dust 2 was their first veto on every game.
And it honestly should always be a veto, because there are teams that have played on Dust 2
for years.
Years and years. And Fnatic, I mean, being a veteran team like Fnatic, that is not one that you want to play them on. They learned their lesson, because like you said, they did veto Dust 2 every other time after that. In group play, they beat Envy, they beat NiP, and they actually went on to the finals, as I'm sure, but looking at semifinals, they beat none other than TSM, which it's their MO to lose in the semifinals. I actually sent you a text when TSM lost saying that at this point, I just feel bad for them.
Yeah, and
I mean, it's, again, when you make semifinals in every tournament, that's not a bad thing, right? I mean, that is a successful team, and you would hate to see it being broken up because they can't make it out of semifinals. When semifinals to any other team would be a hell of a finish.
The Team Liquid, that'd be like a championship.
I would say even Luminosity getting into the semifinals and losing would have been a plus side.
Yeah.
I mean, they replaced two guys on their team 2 days before the tournament. So making it to semifinals for Luminosity was playing with house money.
There was actually, like, while watching that game with TSM, you could see Luminosity. They made some really good plays, and in my opinion, while watching it, they made the right decision every time. And the matches that are the rounds and matches that TSM did take from Luminosity was pretty much just getting the shot before Luminosity could. I feel like Luminosity outplayed TSM at just about every turn.
I mean, overall, I mean, looking at the semifinals with TSM, map one was Mirage, which was LG's pick. TSM won 14-5. After that, Luminosity did not look back. They took TSM on their map. TSM picked Overpass and lost 16-6, which actually is a lot. I mean, when you think of it, went to half 9-6. So when they flipped sides, it was 9-6. Luminosity. Then TSM didn't win a single side on Terrorist.
So that was seven straight rounds then,
yes,
right?
Yeah. I mean, couldn't get any traction there. And at that point, it's 1-1 going into the third of the best of three maps. And if you're TSM, you have to be freaking out at that point, right? You're facing Luminosity, who's on the upswing. You just saw them dominate in group play apart from 1-16-0. Your TSM,
you can't plan for that.
You have a history of not making it past the semifinals. And even if, you know, I get that these are professionals, but that has to get in their head, right? There's no way that you can be TSM and not get in your head that, is this really happening again? Are we really on the brink of elimination again?
So in that game, that's the one that went to OT. In that game, at 15-13, Luminosity basically had TSM on the ropes, and TSM had to do a force buy and ended up winning the round, put Luminosity into a force buy, and then tied it up to force it to OT. And at that point, it seemed like TSM had the momentum going into overtime, but Luminosity just pulled a couple of strats, like random, not really sure what's going on strats out, and TSM just couldn't answer.
Luminosity controlled overtime the entire way through. TSM only ended up taking one round in overtime.
Right,
completely.
And that round they took, Luminosity just did a straight B rush and got demolished. And then I watched the next game specifically to see how they responded, and it was a fake B, fake A, and then back to B, and TSM just couldn't rotate fast enough. And from there on, it was just downhill. Like, they just couldn't figure it out.
And overall, I think the roster moves obviously paid off for them. I think Taco still has some time to adjust. I mean, obviously you can't expect too much in 2 days of prep time. So obviously getting to the finals was cake for them. But I think overall Taco, I mean, he was in the finals towards the bottom with KD and everything. And however you want to look at that, I know he had a lot of clutch plays, but here's my take on being clutch. The only reason in really anything that you can be clutch is because you're in a position that you're about to lose.
We talk about that in other sports all the time.
What is clutch factor? Is being clutch really a good thing? Because if you're clutch and you score in the last second to send it to overtime in any other sport, well, that's because you were down the whole time first.
Right. And
so I take those clutch plays with a grain of salt, because I really think, I think Luminosity is doing fine. 2 days is not enough to judge a team off of roster moves.
Absolutely not.
Whether they did good or bad, I think.
Absolutely not. They had a Cinderella run, but you can't say next game or next tournament that they're going to
be a favorite. No,
yeah.
And I wouldn't consider them a favorite. I mean, from here, I think Richard Lewis even made the point where one of the advantages of switching up your roster so soon before an event is no one has demo. You still have demos on every team. No one has demos on your new roster.
I mean, you can look at Cloud9 for that. When they first broke into the scene with the team that they have, played really well for the first three major tournaments, and then fell off real quick because everybody could plan for them.
Right. So I think that's why you have to take the Cinderella run for what it is, and that's just that. It was a run. I think it was very entertaining to watch. Everybody loved it, but I think you're going to have to see other tournaments to kind of see how it plays out. I do think that they'll still be top 8 team, just because I feel like they were on their way to do that beforehand.
Anyway, yeah.
Right, they were on their way to be a top 8 team.
And they've still got Cold Zero and Fallen, who Cold has been one of the most consistent players I've watched over the last 3 months, consistently performing at a top level, and they still got those two on the team, so.
Fallen's a likable guy. I like him. I see all of him in his, like, press conferences or whatever you want to call them, post-game interviews. I like him. I don't know what it is about him.
I did wonder, so, like, watching...
Though, he is rocking the socks and flip-flops.
Not acceptable.
That's a party foul. Like, come on, Fallen. I was watching an interview today, and I looked down, and I was like,
Is that real?
Is he wearing socks and flip-flops?
It was actually... I feel kind of like... Watching the Face It Finals, whenever they did their pre-game interviews with one of the players, like, I remember specifically they were talking to Kerrigan from TSM and didn't even ask a single question about TSM. They asked TSM everything about Luminosity, then went to Luminosity and started asking them about themselves. It's like, I wonder how these teams feel. Like,
I mean, but that's what everybody was talking about. Everyone could not believe what Luminosity was doing right now. And even in the going into the finals, they were interviewing Fallen, and he made the joke of how so far this team is undefeated, so why not make it this tournament there? But obviously Fnatic had something to say about that, as they ended up defeating Luminosity in the finals 2-1, which for a moment there actually was pretty entertaining considering Luminosity took the first map.
Luminosity that rolled through the two pistol rounds, won them both, and just strung a bunch of wins together on that first map really quick.
So they were actually up against Fnatic there, who apparently isn't missing Pronax all that much, because go figure, they come back and win 100,000 the next tournament after, which just doesn't seem fair. I feel like they are...
Well, of Meister's taken, I guess, is taking a bigger role in planning. And he got voted MVP of the tournament and everything. So, and Dennis is not a bad player by any means. I'm still sad that he left G2.
I still feel like he did dirty to them, but whatever.
I mean, now he's he just won $40,000.
Right.
So
he's not too upset about it. I feel like G2 could have been what Luminosity was. If the crew would have stuck together for G2, I think you saw that upswing on them. They were placing in tournaments, they were doing well. And then their roster just kind of blew up because people are like, hey, we're going to go. People want us now.
Yeah.
It's the other teams pulled the Yankee syndrome where they ended up just paying for players to come to them. So G2 ended up losing. G2 wasn't even in this tournament. They didn't qualify. Cloud9 didn't even qualify for this tournament. The North American teams that you're looking here, Team Liquid there. And then technically Luminosity was a North American.
I tweeted the thing out like, North American CSGO really wants to claim Brazil right now.
Look, South America, America.
Yeah.
They're closer to us than they are European. Just saying. So I think everything looking at a whole, yeah, Team Liquid, they didn't place at this tournament. I don't know what you can take from it. I mean, they did. They took one, but it was against Legacy. So
they didn't win it. They didn't. I mean, I'm no offense to Legacy, but they didn't win a match.
So
Team Liquid didn't win anything.
You saw a rematch between Liquid and Virtus Pro. Now that Virtus Pro had their full roster back, apparently it was just that. I mean, you even said it last episode or last week where...
Oh, yeah.
Liquid
beating VP wasn't really VP because they had stand-ins.
Right.
It's not the same as beating the full roster. And this losing to VP in this tournament 2-0... I mean, that's what actually happened.
And I have a solution here because it drives me insane in these tournaments, and they always do it with group plays that go into bracket play, where Luminosity will play. They had this amazing thing, went into overtime, stress levels has to be at a max, and then 30 minutes later, they have to go play in the finals. Why don't we have a third place match in these things? Because technically, Virtus Pro and Team Solo Mid are sharing third and fourth, and they have the same prize pool.
I mentioned that. I was like, I wonder how Luminosity feels having to play that match immediately after the OT win. Like,
I mean, I couldn't
do
it. I mean,
it can go either way. Like, you're either completely amped up, or you're completely on the fritz because you were so stressed out about hitting your shot.
You would have to be mentally exhausted. I mean, I have issues playing, like, three competitive matches back-to-back, let alone a best of three in a semifinals at, you know, DreamHack Winter. So why don't they just gap the semifinals and the finals with a third place match? In every other thing in life, we have first, second, third. For whatever reason here, you have first, second, third, and fourth are basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's that's a good point. Maybe they're worried about the Switch and
I don't
equipment.
Get it.
I don't know.
I don't get it, and I never will. I think the best thing to do was what San Jose did, where they had
that
best of three single elimination tournament. After keep on jumping back and forth from single eliminations to group tournaments and things.
Well, that goes all the way back. I mean, when we were talking to Jason Baker last episode, CPL, Gottfrag basically said from the get-go that single elimination best of three was the best format for viewers.
Yeah, I think it streamlines. I think people have time to watch and everything like that because these all-day tournaments, man, they are killer.
Yeah, if you want to watch it, it's like 14 hours.
They are every weekend, and 2 to 3 days a piece, and man, it wears on you. It wears on you. So that's it. I mean, really, for as far as CSGO, like I said, great play that was very overshadowed by a lot of drama going on. Luminosity, awesome Cinderella story. Only time will tell where that goes. Do you have anything left to say on that? I mean, because DreamHack was not just CSGO.
No.
They had plenty of things there. Let's jump into the micro. You have, first off, DreamHack had Hearthstone, where Purple ended up winning on Hearthstone. Take competitive Hearthstone for what you want, right?
I don't know. I like playing Hearthstone because I can just sit there and kind of relax and play it. I just don't understand it as a competitive game.
The meta is too meta for me. Like, I feel like physical card games like Magic or anything like that, you kind of have more freedom because of getting cards and booster packs and whatever. But in Hearthstone, you'll even hear the pros say this, it's the same five or six decks. I mean, you know, if someone picks a mage, exactly what deck they're using.
Yeah, the first two or three cards.
Yeah, by turn two or three, you know what it is, and it's kind of like, all right, well, let's RNGesus, please help me out here and give me the cards I need, because if not, yeah, I know exactly how this is going to go.
Yeah, and I love watching the Hearthstone personalities on Twitch and stuff, because I feel like they hate the fact that they're professional Hearthstone players because they have to play it so often. Like, if you watch Reynad or whatever play, he looks like he hates it.
He's the one who said that it is just not that exciting to be a professional Hearthstone player, because it's just same stuff, different day. I mean, it's just all it is a constant rotation door.
Thank you, Blizzard, for throwing money at that, is pretty much what the professional players say.
And then you had Super Smash Brothers Melee, of course, was there. Actually, a very big tournament. This was in, obviously, Sweden, which was our Armada's home turf there. Props, I will say this, props to the Smash community. I don't know how they had the setup there, but while you were watching, because I had like picture in picture and everything going on.
Right.
While I had Smash on mute, watching the analysis and everything talk about CSGO, and you could hear the Smash crowd cheering in the background of the CSGO and everything there. So how that worked out, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know how they had that set up or anything like that, but props to the Smash community there for getting loud enough to where you could be heard on other broadcasts.
That is the Smash community. I mean there's no other way to put it. They're special.
So you had Armada on his home turf going into the tournament. It was on an 8 win streak for tournaments. He's won the last 8 tournaments that he has been a part of, which is insane to think about. I mean, imagine Fnatic winning 8 in a row. It would be unreal to go on a run like that, especially, I mean, this is in Smash where the prize pools aren't nearly as big, but in a bigger game and everything, if you won that would be insane. So Armada, clearly the favorite going into it. Hungrybox had something to say about this, that rivalry was kind of building up and everything, and Hungrybox ended up taking first place, which was a huge upset in the realm of Armada just not winning. It wasn't that anyone thought Hungrybox couldn't beat them. It was just a big upset in the fact that the streak is over and everything there. And I actually showed you the video.
Yeah, we're going to put the video in the show notes. It was a very, very emotional win for him.
It was, I mean, instant. The second Armada, you know, last stock went away off the screen, Hungrybox breaks down. Like, he goes to shake Armada's hands while covering his face with the other, because he just couldn't hold the emotion. He broke down. He started to cry, which I know, like, you were like, why is he crying and everything
I had no idea what the backstory was on it. So,
how many times do you see that? I mean, it's Smash is one of those unique things where it's professional gaming, but it's just you out there. You know, you don't have 5 guys to get hyped up about or teamwork or anything. I mean, that is, the performance is all on you. So it has that unique outlook of when you win, you are the only guy on that podium.
That's true.
So I think that holds weight as far as that goes. So you had Hungrybox take first place there. Armada taking second. You had Plup take third. And West Balls, who had a really good run, take fourth. That was actually West Balls, one of his better finishes there. I think everybody is saying for 2016, you're looking at him being one of the favorites for 2016, which... we should see him at DreamHack Austin. We should.
We'll get him on.
He's American, so you would assume any American Smash will be there. I think DreamHack is big enough, though, to where we should actually see some pretty good talent. And then Mango, he got 6 players.
Wah, wah, wah.
Mango did not perform very well. But that was in Europe, and we all know his opinion on that. what do you have for the micro?
Nothing quite as in-depth as that. Devil Walk has left Winter Fox. Shortly after them securing that super sweet one of the industry's
why would
first
he leave
sponsorships,
that? Why would he leave?
Where they had a room that was painted Winter Fox purple to practice in,
like a broom closet.
Yeah, there was no windows allowed. Just sit there and play your games. That team has constantly been in flux, and it was one of the first teams to try to pull players from different parts of the world and put them together. And it hasn't really worked out very well. They do have a cool logo, though. That's about the upside for Winter Fox is they have a cool logo and they make interesting videos. On another note, Digital Chaos paid a transfer fee for Cloud9's Dota 2 player 1437.
Worst name of all time.
Yeah. And instead of Cloud9 trying to replace him and continue on, they have disbanded their Dota 2 roster.
Yeah. You know, that news, I think, broke, I believe on Thanksgiving, 25th, I want to say. And I was actually kind of surprised to see a team like an organization, I should say, like Cloud9 completely disband a team. One thing I couldn't see in any statements, though, is that they were completely giving up. Like when Ninjas in Pajamas disbanded their team, they made in their statement, we're not, like, don't expect anything else. We're focusing on Counter-Strike. Just, yeah, we're exclusive Counter-Strike now. I didn't see anything in there, and Cloud9, to me, has always been part of Dota 2. I mean, when they had Internal Envy on that team, that's when I got into Cloud9. Like, that's what made me get into Dota 2. That's what got me into Cloud9 as an organization. So I can't imagine that they completely wiped the board. But can you imagine being the two guys left on the team that, I guess, three guys that were left on the team, and then all of a sudden you get the notification of like, hey, we're just so over this trying to find replacements. We're just going to disband the team and we'll see what happens.
Well, it's,
I think disbanding just has such a negative, like almost like you can't disband a team and completely rebuild. It's a very odd move for me.
Well, it's, and you know, a couple, like a week before Cloud9 actually officially announced that they were disbanding, they had dismissed another player, Ritsu, from the roster. And it, a word on the street was that it was, or a statement actually from 1437 kind of alluded to him having like a bad attitude with the game and him trying to fix it came too late. The direct quote, his recent efforts to improve his behavior came too late. And following our elimination from the major, which was Frankfurt, it was determined that Cloud9 was no longer the place for him to be. So it seems like there were some internal struggles, and I'm with you. The Cloud9 statement never once mentions that they're not going to be involved in Dota 2, just that they're disbanding this roster, and who knows, they could go and pick up
a whole other roster.
Right. Yeah.
They could just buy out a whole other roster and make it there. So that's obviously coming after a disappointing loss at Frankfurt Major when they lost in the first part of the losers bracket, so that obviously probably played some part into it all. But my theory on this is that this is the curse of the Cloud9 player poster. So on their website, you can buy like a poster. They always, like, for every tournament, major, whatever you want to say, they always like make a tournament poster that has their roster up, and it's like kind of cartoon drawn, and it's all like Dota themed related that. And I swear to God, every time they come out with it, somebody either leaves the team or they kick someone off the team. And now you have this poster with old players that nobody wants. I think it's the curse of the poster. Because seriously,
you got to wonder, like, do they have a warehouse just full of
they have
posters
because
that they can't get rid of?
Literally every time they come out with one, someone leaves the team or there's a roster move. And I'm sure they're just like, mother of God. Like, can we just stop just for 2 seconds? Can we just stay on the team so we can at least sell one of these posters? But there's a lot of actually roster moves going on with the Cloud9 organization. One that hit me dear. It hurt to read it, but Sean Garris left Cloud9 Counter-Strike GO.
He's not playing anymore. He hasn't left Cloud9, has he?
It was announced. Sean Garris stepped down from the Cloud9 roster. In a statement, I guess we should have saw it coming, because he did say, I actually told the boys I wanted to step down a couple months ago. And, you know, he did say that he might be willing to coach the team eventually, but right now there were no talks of it. So we will only see really in time what will happen, but I wanted to pull audio from his Twitch stream that he talked about it, but my God, it was a terrible stream. I was like getting ready for like a press conference, and no, it was like It was terrible. He was like reading donations in the middle of him explaining why he left Cloud9. And in the end, he was basically like, well, I just wanted more time. So really, he said he just wants to take the month of December off just to kind of regroup, get things in order in life.
Don't they have that off anyway?
I mean, you know, when you stop qualifying for tournaments, you've got to have all the time in the world. I don't know what it's like. Hey, Sean, you guys didn't even qualify for DreamHack Winter. You had all that time off. Like, what are you talking about? But he was saying how just professional gaming is a full-time job. And
I wish I could just tell my job, like, hey, man, I need a couple months.
You're taking up a lot of my time. Like, 40 hours a week, sometimes 40 and a half. I'm just going to take this month off. I'll let you know what's going on later. So he said that he might do that. As of now, though, like I said, he did mention to them months ago that he was kind of on the fence about leaving. I don't want to like nitpick what he said, because taking things out of context, I feel, is a dirty move that media and journalism does, but I'm going to do it here. He did say that he felt like the team's preparation just really wasn't up to par from what he was wanting to do. Again, I don't want to nitpick and make it sound like that's a big deal, but I mean, it could have been that he was just frustrated with the team's performance and he felt like, no, we need to focus more on the little details, like let's work the kinks out, and they just didn't want to do it. So he says over the last couple of months, he's been sitting down with Jordan or Nothing, as you most people probably know him as, to kind of transition Nothing into the team in-game leader. I don't know how that's going to work out, to be honest with you. I know
if that takes time away from him doing stupid interviews on stage, I'm all for it.
Yes, we need less rapping. This is very true. I don't know how it's going to work with Nothing being in-game leader. Honestly, this is my personal opinion. I think the in-game leader tag is very overhyped to begin with. I don't think it means as much as people make it seem. Like, whenever I play, you know, Counter-Strike or anything, and obviously never at, like, a major competitive level like these guys, but I feel like it's, like, kind of a committee deal where it's like, all right, what are we going to do this time, guys? And maybe you'll have that occasional person who always steps up, but to make it sound like one person is the shot caller, I feel like that's just...
I've always kind of associated it to similar to basketball, because, I mean, it's got the same kind of momentum where you stop and start in each...
And you have, like, the point guard, and he's the one directing.
You have the point guard that'll call a play, but if something happens, everybody needs to be able to respond.
Right, and so I feel like some people just... They tag on to, oh, he's the in-game leader, and that's what needs to happen, and blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe it's not, though. Maybe it can be a committee deal. Maybe it is for some teams. Maybe one team doesn't have necessarily a quote-unquote, you know, in-game leader.
I've heard people talk about teams doing, like, one person does in-game leading on the terrorist side, and one does it on the CT side.
Or on this map, there's
like, no.
I just feel like it should just be a committee deal, and that's... whatever, everyone just figures out what's going to work on this map. I think that the coach should honestly be the one calling the shots.
I totally agree with that. Like, I don't understand what the point of the coaches are, especially if you've got people that say they're in-game leading. Like, what is that guy back there doing then? Just like, hey, right. Nice kill?
And that's what it seems, though. You talk to some of the coaches and they're like, you know, I'm just here for the guys. I'm here to let them know when they need to work harder and just keep their head in the right spot. So you're like their fluffer? Like, what is it? What are you doing? Like, are you suggesting ideas to them?
Could we ask you for a Red Bull or Monster? Like,
like, if it's hot, can you go turn the AC up? Or what is it that coaches do that I'm missing here that I think that they should be doing? Because I think the coach should be the shot caller. Like, all right, guys, let's try this one out.
So if you are... a Counter-Strike coach, get at us on Twitter. We want to talk to you about what you actually do in your thing at the Center Ring.
Well,
hit us up.
And I know there's even like discussion of actual traditional sport coaches slowly making their way into the esports.
I have a bone to pick with that because I know what you're talking about.
Right.
It's TSM announcing that they have a traditional sport coach joining their organization.
Yes, it's
a 26-year-old guy that's never coached anything professionally.
It's a guy who played a traditional sport in life, and he's doing this.
And
I get, so that's why I was saying it in the tone of like, I guess it's a traditional whatever.
And his entire job, according to the press release,
is to make them feel good.
Is to make them feel like, let them know when they like work on their work ethic.
Like, hey guys, that was a great.
That's
great
not a
game.
Coach. That's a mom.
It's a cheerleader.
Like, he's gonna bring juice boxes and oranges.
It's ridiculous, and I feel like coaches need to play a bigger role in esports. Not necessarily with every team, but if you feel like your team needs them, because there are some professional teams out there that don't even have a coach.
So it makes
you wonder on why some teams insist the needing of a coach. That's why I don't understand. So if Sean Garris was the shot caller on Cloud9, that's why it actually made a lot of sense to me if they were trying to get Get Right or Swag back on the team.
Those Get Right to Cloud9, that stuff's hilarious.
Well, and even Sean was like, I don't know who's going to be on the team, but he's like, I don't see how Get Right. Like, there's a lot of hurdles to jump if Get Right's going to get on the team.
Ah, it's funny.
Like, I feel like Get Right would probably want to join about five other teams before he thought about joining Cloud9.
But the funniest one I saw was they took Get Right's Twitter image, profile image, and then put white over it. And it was like,
what is with that? Do people honestly think Cloud9 is taking an image of their person and like,
and then
I
was like, well, I assumed it was because his hair kind of looked like a cloud. And I was like, I guess they were trying to make it look like the avatar image on the
like
Cloud9
blank,
website.
That's what people are trying to do. And it's like, I can't tell if you're kidding anymore. Like, it's gotten to the point where some of these rumors are so out there. It's like,
like, you wonder if the person actually believes it.
Right. Like, I don't get it, but it's ridiculous there. So anyways, Cloud9 is a man down. They have plenty of time to think about who they're going to do. I know they mentioned open roster or open tryouts and everything like that. So maybe I'll make an appearance. See if the boys need me.
Open tryouts, whatever.
I mean, look, if Freakazoid can go like 4-20 some games, I can do that. I mean, if you need a guy to go like -16, I can get that done.
Okay. I'm looking at the Cloud9 website. I'm pretty sure they're trolling people with that.
I think they should just rotate it out every day.
Just a new
like get Pasha up there and just see what people do. Anyways, that is going to be it for today. Wrapping this piece up. Episode 11 of The Center Ring. Thank you so much if you listened all the way through or if you skipped and got to this point exactly where I said thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. You can hit us up on all of the hip social media sources that kids are using nowadays. You can find me on the Twitter. I am at Pirate Mushroom. Brandon is
at Brand PGN. Still
sticking with the old one, huh? Living in the heydays.
I'll change it. Jeez.
You can follow the show, obviously, at The Center Ring. It's pretty simple. The name of the show with an at symbol in front of it. We do have a website that is tcr.gg. You can check out all the latest shows there, even the show notes. So if we ever talk about a visual or anything that you would like to see, that is where it's at. If you're ever wondering about what we're talking about, we try our best to put everything up there. But if there is something on there that we talked about and you want to argue with us about it, call us idiots, call us geniuses. There's actually a big white box on the website that says contact us. You click that and it contacts us. You can do that. You can hit us up on Twitter, anything like that. We have a Twitch that's coming eventually. YouTube that's coming eventually.
You sound so thrilled about that. Anyway.
Look. I'm breaking it. I hate YouTube, but we will.
All right.
We got to give it to the people. Anyways, that is it for today. TCR episode 11 is in the books again. We will be back next week with a more fun-filled episode of drama and esports. Whatever tournament decides to pop up, we will have it for you here next time on The Center Ring.